Welcome to Sundial. I'm Carlos Frias. The artist Nora Maite-Nieves has her head in the clouds. Her paintings and her video projects make us look differently at the cloudy skies. The clouds she could see through the concrete breeze blocks in her home of Puerto Rico. The clouds poking between high-rises in New York City. And now the clouds draping over the water in West Palm Beach, where she's the artist in residence at the Norton Museum of Art. Clouds have been very good to Nora. Her new exhibit, Clouds in the Expanded Field, is the highlight of her residency in South Florida. It'll be showing at the Norton through July 7th. It's also her first solo exhibit. Nora uses her art to connect her Caribbean roots to the skies above whatever city she might find herself in. Today, she finds herself in our studio. So let's talk clouds with Nora. Nora, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. You braved that drive from West Palm Beach.
Yes.
To down here. I told you I've made that drive. It can get tricky. So thank you for coming all the way down.
Yeah, thank you. It was very smooth. I took the express line.
Well, very good. And did it the right way.
And good weather, so I can't complain.
Perfect. Well, that puts us in we can talk about weather. We can talk about clouds in particular, since that's the title of your new exhibit. And I'm curious, how did you start thinking about that being like a metaphor for the art that you were trying to create?
To create about the clouds.
Mm, yeah.
So it kind of started a little bit in the pandemic, and a lot of walks in the park. Mm. I was in Brooklyn, in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, for most of the time in New York.
Oh, so that was a time that was really, I mean, we had it a lot different than New York City, where you have lots of high rise, a lot of people packed in together, and a lot of people trapped in their buildings for a lot of times, right?
Yes, it was very intense, especially at the beginning. You will not stop listening to ambulance, and like it felt really real.
Yeah.
Not only like through the radio or the news, but we could hear it. As a difference, like other places that are open landscapes and more spread out.
Sure.
Like in New City, you will feel it. So it kind of started after that. Like we started walking more through after the month keep going, and you realize you can go outside without the mask.
And you found yourself like looking up at the skies.
Looking a lot at the sky, yeah, with my husband, Jonathan Garner, which is also an artist. And we spent time looking at the clouds.
Jonathan was here in the studio with us today,
yes,
in the other room. What's up, Jonathan?
So he paints a lot of clouds in his paintings. Clouds are very part of our history and the history of painting and landscape. And I thought we should spend more time looking at clouds. Like what will happen if clouds disappear? Our atmosphere will like disintegrate.
So you use that as kind of an entryway to start thinking about big questions. Like what,
yes,
big questions can we address, can we talk about when we're thinking, using your art as a medium to answer some,
yes,
of these questions,
to,
right?
To answer some of that, and I think we started looking like, you kind of want to like to breathe and like to find some hope and some exit through the reality that we were experiencing. And I thought my husband... we started like an Instagram account called Clouds Watchers Club. I think it is the Instagram account.
Cool, everybody check that out. Clouds Watchers Club.
Just to show like clouds whenever we can, because we have a lot of photos. And then I said, I think I want to paint some clouds.
Like it started to become an inspiration,
yes,
for you.
Yes, and I was like, why? He's like, why not? Just do it. So that's how I started.
And that got you to West Palm Beach.
Yes.
Like, because you're originally from Puerto Rico.
From Puerto Rico.
You're born there, and
mm-hmm,
you spent a lot of time in New York. But
yes,
but coming here, this has got to feel like something in between Puerto Rico and...
It does feel like, right, that. The landscape feels very familiar. The weather in Puerto Rico, I mean, you don't have here the mountains in the background of,
right,
the landscape, which is very predominant,
right,
after you like come out of the airport. You see the clouds, everything, but also the mountains in the background. But the weather, that heat your face when you come out of the airport, you know, you feel
that. That's familiar,
yes,
right?
Yes, very familiar.
So talk to me about that. Like, you get here into West Palm Beach, and how did that play into your, what you were thinking about at the time, the art that you're thinking about, and how did you use the place, right? The place of West Palm to create.
So I have visited South Florida before, and I have family in that lives in Orlando.
Okay.
From, but you know, they moved years ago, so more recently.
Yeah, there's a huge Puerto Rican population in Orlando for years and years now, yeah.
So when I come, I always like very like surprised. Well, not surprised, but like amazed by the beautiful clouds that are in this open landscape. It's just so flat that you can like see miles of clouds. And so I had that in mind, and I felt, you know, this might connect with the people in South Florida.
Right. And you, and that's interesting to me because you, when you talk about clouds, you have this image of something very soft and kind of wispy and hard to wrap your mind around. Mm-hmm. But your art is very bright and it's very vibrant. And it's like, and it's not about the clouds. It's what you see. It's the environment that you're looking through into the clouds is what it feels like.
Yes.
So it feels very active. It feels very bright and urban and very relatable.
Yes. And it's very physical. Hmm. And clouds are very ephemeral and like hard to contain. And like to grasp, you will not be able to touch them if you're up there. And for me, it's also like hard when you look at it and you take a photo, you are looking at the landscape and you would like to capture that, but the photo has like a frame and you miss. There's something that miss in the medium. And I think it also happened in painting. So for me, it was like, I have to portray this subject matter of clouds in a way that brings something new, in a way that evoke more of a atmosphere, of a temperament, of a mystery, because it's a painting. You will not experience the same thing in real life.
Right.
So the painting is something different. It's imagination and it's a interpretation of what you see.
Right. I'm curious how you know, kind of being in different environments inspires you. Let's talk about inspiration for a little bit, right?
Yes.
You grew up in Puerto Rico, and then you find yourself in New York, which has a huge Puerto Rican diaspora.
Uh-huh.
And do you find yourself trying to draw parallel? And then you find in West Palm, which, you know, South Florida has its contingent of a Puerto Rican community.
Yeah.
But in a different sense, do you find yourself trying to find things that relate between those things to draw inspiration?
Well, I find connections through architecture and the more modernist references in houses and buildings, the modernist concrete breeze blocks, the ornamentation of architecture, and that's something that inspired me, and I bring that from memories that I have of places I live in Puerto Rico.
Right, and breeze blocks I think are also big in South Florida too. We should explain that, like, a lot of houses were built with these kind of concrete cutouts in certain walls to kind of encourage
the airflow
in a time where pre-air conditioning, which, like, my house was built pre-air conditioning, and so were a lot of South Florida houses.
Exactly, and it's very wise, and I think it should continue, even though we have AC, and I think that part of architecture should, like, be embraced and expand and being brought now in the new designs. Because we never know, like, hurricanes happen, lights go out, you know, so...
Listen, as someone who's been out of power for 3 weeks during a hurricane in South Florida, yes, if your house has good airflow, it makes a big difference.
And it's something that it was thought from the beginning of, like, making buildings and houses and construction, like, before.
Because you had to, because how else were you going to live down here? I want to say that a lot in the Florida's West Coast, you had a lot of houses that were designed literally with really high ceilings and all completely designed for airflow structure. And I know architecture is really interesting to you. You thought you were going to be an architect,
right?
It
is. And it impact your behavior, impact your the ambience, your mood, everything, like even like light coming through the windows in the way that affect the space. it affect you. And I like those things about, that's what I like about architecture. When I was like at some point in my teenager, I don't know, years, I contemplate the possibility of becoming an architect because I like the idea of designing things.
It also makes it all, if you have parents who are not artists, which I think in your case, like that, that's a sensible thing. Well, you seem to be very creative. Let's get you into a field that feels tangible.
Yes.
Right. And we had the artist Jermaine Barnes, who is an artist and an architect, and he talked about those things on the show. Folks can find that in our podcast library, but that feeling of architecture is more than just a construction of a building or a place. It's mm-hmm. more like how that thing interacts with its own particular environment.
With humans.
Right.
Like with the people who's going to experience it.
With the people who are going to use it, right.
Yes. And I think the architects that have that in mind are designing more successful spaces and more fair and more generous.
Fair. Talk to me about that. What is it about? What kind of architecture do you say fairness? Like, what do you mean when you say fairness in designing a place?
I think thinking first of the person and the people who's going to experience it, who's going to live there, what do they do there, what the space is going to be used for, and find compromise between your design desires and ambitions as an architect but also with the use of the space and how is the best way for who you are designing. And I think it's like more user centered.
I feel like you have this is a a topic that you're going to come back to at some point in your career here. Is that something that's interesting to you? Is from what you've seen and your view and some of your art is so much through architecture. Has that been something that interests you? Like, how can I apply this, what I've learned from an artistic standpoint, to something more tangible?
I think these are interested that are part of myself that I have learned through my career. I also work and study graphic design, and that took me into working with a design studio in Puerto Rico that belonged to an artist from Puerto Rico, Marimater O'Neill, and the design studio was called Rubber Band LLC. And with them, I learned how to design websites and how to really think about the design user, about the people that you are working for. And it's really a mindset that kind of put the designer a little bit in the backseat, more as a witness and a researcher, and to understand what are the needs of what I'm going to solve. Because a designer is a problem solver. And I think that stuck to me, and I learned from that. And when I bring that way of thinking to my art, it switched a little bit, because I feel like being an artist and making art and painting especially, which is a little bit more alone, it's less teamwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can bring people to work with you. But it's a little bit more selfish in a way of like, it's what I want to do.
Right.
And this is my voice, and this is what I want.
I want to ask you more about that, about those anxieties and fears in the creative process and how you got to this point. Our guest today is Nora Maite Nieves. She's currently the artist in residence at the Norton Museum of Art in West Palm Beach. Her current exhibit, Clouds in the Expanded Field, is now open at the Norton, and it's showing through July 7th. You're talking so much about this creative process and like how you begin to get into that space, and that's what's interesting to me, is both what is inspiring to you and kind of dealing with the anxieties in that mm-hmm. process. So talk to me about that. We're like, how do you get into a creative space?
It's something that I don't think about it too much. I just do, and I just go into it and work.
Because you were telling me earlier that sometimes in your studio you'll put on a podcast.
Oh yeah.
Or you'll put on some music. What kind of music gets you usually like your juices flowing?
Well, I have a lot of guilty pleasures and
okay,
music.
That's fine. Listen, it doesn't all have to be Stravinsky. Like, what's your guilty pleasure in music?
Oh, I don't know. A lot of like Spanish things from the 80s and the 90s.
I love it. Like what? Juan Luis Guerra.
Juan Luis Guerra, Davila. I don't remember. Yolandita Monge. I mean, Luis Miguel.
Yes.
I mean, this like really like things that I would listen on the way to school with my mom in the car.
Was your mom big into music? Because I'm curious about your parents, like growing up in an environment that breeds a little bit of a creative spirit.
I mean, my dad is a lawyer and my mom, she's like kind of like a later became more of a paralegal.
Working with your dad in the field?
No, actually it happened after they got divorced.
Okay. She's like, well, I've heard so much about this in my entire life married to this man. I might as well use some of it.
Yes. And so anyway, my mom always put the radio in Puerto Rico was like Stereo Tempo. I remember that radio station, which is more romantic, more boleros, more balada. And so we will listen to that and we'll sing the songs. I mean, I think that's not a very collective experience that my generation had.
Who were the artists that you knew in your life growing up? Because I'm always curious, like, what is the person or the event that you witnessed that makes you start thinking, oh, this is a thing that I could do?
Yeah. So I always liked to draw, like, you know, in my what I call my free time, which was like all the time.
right, before you have to work for a living, it's all free time, right?
And I think it was in fourth grade, and I had this friend in that time in elementary. Her name is Nicole Bueso, and she saw me like drawing, and she likes to draw too. And she told me, oh, my dad is a painter. He's an artist. I kind of like didn't believe her. Until one day she invited me to her house and her dad came out with the painter hat to greet me and my mom and, you know, with his wife, Tere. And so I could go and play there. And when he came out, I'm like, oh, my God, he is a painter.
So he had like some painter hat? Like was he covered in paint? Was he?
No, he wasn't, but he looked artistic. I don't even know how to explain it. He looked like more bohemian, like a kind of like a musician.
And you're like, that spoke to you.
Yes. And I was like, oh, this is true.
Right.
And as soon as I walk in into her house, all the walls of her house were completely covered in
artwork.
Artworks.
Wow.
Painters. Painting. A lot from him, a lot of from Augusto Marín, like other painters from his generation.
And that was Andy Hueso.
Andy Hueso.
And he is a well-known
artist in Puerto Rico, right?
And that, so you happen to be in this place to be exposed. I mean, it goes, you know, every even big towns or small towns, right?
Yes, and he is my archetype of what an artist was and is.
You imprinted on that like a baby bird.
It was imprinted on me, and I thought, oh my God, I want to do this. Like, how can I? I just, not even realizing I want to do this, I just felt like at home in some way. Like, mm-hmm. Like this feels good.
Right. I always call that like finding your tribe.
Yes.
Right. Like that moment where you feel that you see other people doing a thing that you connect with in some way.
And it turned out that he had has a studio on the top of his house. His artist studio, which I got the chance to see later. But he also had in another house in University Gardens in Rio Piedras in San Juan, Puerto Rico. He had his Academy of Art.
Wow.
Where he would teach from kids to adults and like older teenagers and young artists. He would teach them art. And they say, oh, why don't you bring Nora to classes?
To come take some art classes.
Yes.
So that changed your life.
That changed my life.
And being around that, in other words, you were exposed to this kind of archetypal artist who turns out to be one of the best known painters of his time in Puerto Rico. And now you're surrounded with other people who've been struck in the same way.
Yes.
What was that like to be able to then kind of develop that and breathe into that?
Just thinking of breathing into it, just walking into the workshop, the art salon, just the smell. The smell of paint, the smell of charcoal, of pencil, of sharpeners, of art materials, basically. It was magical, and I felt like, oh, it just feels good. And he teach me how to look at things, how to understand and transfer what I was seeing into paper. And that's where it started, and I never thought, oh, I was going to become an artist. I just like felt like this is something that I like to do and learn.
How did the people around you kind of, did they begin to see that from the outside, that this was something that was becoming a larger and larger part of your life and the way that you saw the world?
Yeah, I mean, after, I think I did like a couple of years or 3 years with him. And then, I mean, my mom, I think at some point couldn't afford the glasses anymore,
right,
for the time.
Art,
I mean,
school is not free, yeah.
And I continue living and always like drawing and stuff on my own. And it was in 11th grade that I had the opportunity to join and enter to the Central de Artes Visuales. It's a high school in Puerto Rico in Santurce.
It's like a center for visual arts.
Yes, kind of center for visual arts. It's a high school specializing art in fine arts. And it's very unlikely like someone will like enter an 11th grade. But I did. It's a whole story.
Oh, wow. So it was a whole... You got into school.
I don't know. That's another podcast episode.
If you say so. I mean we're in one right now.
But I got in and I picked the painting and drawing studio.
And so having access to that, especially at an early age, which was, you know... It now becomes, instead of one thing that you do and one part of your life, it's like central and everything else kind of gets built up around it. Talk to me about those moments where you started to realize that this could be central to your career. Like you could make a career of this and that you had something to say through your work.
Well, when I entered to La Central, this high school, I started in the drawing and painting, and I thought, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Forget about being a lawyer. Forget about being an architect. I want to be a painter. I want to be an artist.
I always had this moment, because I've been a writer for my whole life, and I had this moment where a teacher once said to me, it was like I was very critical of some Shakespeare thing in class, and he said something like, you know, you should really make writing for a living, and it was the first time someone had told me that I could do that. Talk to me about those moments, people that mentor you had said something to you that really stuck with you, that helped you keep going, because I'm sure at some point your mom or your dad said, hey, how about architecture?
Yes, you know? They were a little bit worried, but at the same time, they supported me. I am very persistent. I am very a little bit stubborn.
Should we bring in Jonathan and ask him about that?
Yeah,
see
knows.
How little bit of liberal stern. I'm kidding.
And it was challenging because I started there with a lack of skills and a lack of preparation.
Oh, interesting. You knew that you had more to say than your skills were caught up to yet. Your skills hadn't caught up to your thought process.
And the teacher, I remember he told me, I said, I want to be here. And he said, are you sure? Why don't you take the weekend to think about it? Because maybe your dream can become your worst nightmare.
Oh.
And that just gave me gasoline.
Oh, really?
To come back.
So you're like 16 years old, and that could have really taken the wind out of your sails.
And then I'm like,
the opposite.
Yeah, I think I was like 16 or 15 or something like that. And I left and I went to Andy Hueso. I went to this, to the, his, I knew where his studio was and his academy. And I said, hey, can I talk to you? This is happening. I got him. Can you, what would you do? And he said, go back on Monday, get in that classroom, sit down and start. And you will come back here every Saturday and I'll help you. You're gonna cut up with the other students. You're gonna do it. It's not a big deal. Everyone that wants to do it. And I did that. I went back on Monday and I sit down and I said, something that I love and it's my dream, it can never be my nightmare. And I sit down and I started.
Amazing.
So he,
in more than one way, he became further than inspiration. He boosted you up. He kept you going on that path. Up.
And at the end, I graduated and as a senior, and he gave me the award of drawing.
Wow! From someone who was late to the game with technical skills.
Yes.
Now you get this award.
He gave me the award, and I appreciate it because I think, you know, he as a teacher, like he knew, he saw like lack of skills. He wanted maybe to protect me in some way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, I don't know. But it just, for me, was like a fuel. Okay, I'm going to do this. Like, I go to me.
Right. Yeah, you bet on yourself.
I bet on myself. And I think he appreciated and he awarded me and like supported me after that.
Talk to me then about that lesson, right? That lesson to really bet on yourself and believe mm-hmm. in yourself and work on your craft, right?
Yeah.
How has that played into your career now when you get a big fellowship and now you're the artist in residence at the Norton, you know, when you're given this opportunity, how do you use that when you have those moments of uncertainty?
Uncertainty. You know? Well, I think I found that through my whole life, through my whole career, those moments of what to do. This is hard. Can I do it? I doubt myself. And I try to find that person again and be like, I can do it. I will push through. Sometimes I think I push through too much and I burn out. But I love a challenge and I take it. And I feel like I developed through my career, my character, a sense of responsibility. And it happened at jobs. I have worked so many things. And I feel like once I take something, I feel responsible and I go through it until the end. And I feel like when this opportunity came at the Norton Museum of Art, for me was a little bit nerve-wracking and nervous. Like, this is like so big. Like, do I deserve it? You know, like you start to doubt
yourself.
Imposter syndrome. Right, and I'm like, oh my God. And my husband is like, of course you are. You have worked really hard. And the curator, art and chairman of the show, which is the one who invited me and have pushed me to in many ways, in a good way. Just the fact to have someone that believe in you and they see something, I'm like, if they're seeing something, how can I tell them it's not true? Or, you know, I have to try.
Right. Talk to me about then connecting that time between now and where you're creating now at the Norton and that getting out of Puerto Rico. Because I guess there's a phase where you decided that there was something that you wanted to do that was off the island, that was on mainland, cause that brought you to New York. Tell me about that.
So I left Puerto Rico in 2008 to do my master's degree at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. I think it was the right moment. I graduated from my undergrad in 2004, I think, in La Escuela de Artes Plásticas in Old San Juan. And it took me like 4 years or 3 years. I have worked, again, many things, but always like continue my practice as an artist, always pushing, always, even though I had a day job, I would like continue my art.
What kind of day job were you doing? You're in Chicago. What kind of thing are
in
you doing?
In Chicago or in Puerto Rico?
Well, now you put
Let's
me in
go
Chicago.
To Chicago.
I'm thinking of you as this growing up in tropical Puerto Rico,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And now you're in Chicago. My nephew's there right now, and I know it's negative whatever it is right
yes.
now. How
yes.
did that affect? I mean, obviously it affected you, and you're the vehicle of the art.
Yeah.
How did that affect your desire, your ability to create?
So when I arrived, I fell in love with the architecture of the city.
Incredible architecture, yeah.
It's very different parts, different neighborhoods. I liked the people, was very nice. I went in the spring. So
if you were fooled, you're like, oh, this is nice. This
yes.
is cool weather. I'll just put on a jacket.
And Chicago knows that. Chicago plays for that. Mm-hmm. They plant during the winter a lot of flowers that will bloom exactly in the spring.
In the spring.
Which is when I arrive and I'm like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And they do it. I think this is my theory. I think Chicago do it so people don't leave.
right. No, it's a great idea.
Yes. Because every winter people are like, enough. I'm leaving. Spring comes. Everything blooms. Activities in the park.
Chicago's
you
the best.
The city. Summer is amazing there. And then you're like, oh, maybe one more year. And then suddenly you're again in fall, December.
Right. And you got seven yes. layers on.
Yes.
And so talk to me about how that influenced your art. Because so much of your art is transporting, is like looking up at the sky that you looked up in the tropics mm-hmm. and kind of feeling like we're all under the same sky, like all these things under the same sky. How did you transport, you know, your roots when you're creating so far away, so far from home?
Well, one of the reasons that I selected to go to Chicago and stay there in that school, the school's amazing. But also when I went to the interview in the painting department and I go up the building that faced the lake and faced Millennium Park, mm-hmm. I saw the horizon line of the lake. And it's a lake that looks like a sea. You don't see the other side.
Right.
You know, you forget that it's a lake. And that horizon line and that blue water, I mean, less blue than the one in Puerto Rico.
Of course.
But it gives you this illusion. And I felt, oh, this could be home, you know, home for a while.
Our guest today is Nora Maite Nieves. She's currently the artist in residence at the Norton Museum of Art in West Palm Beach. Her exhibit, Clouds in the Expanded Field, is now open at the Norton. Its showing has been extended through July 7th. We were talking about how you're like coming to the mainland, mm-hmm. being in a place like Chicago, which is so different, how that kind of changed the trajectory of your art and your career. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that. Like, what was the big moment that was like the next big hitch, the next thing that got you going in a different direction?
So when I moved to Chicago, I wanted in my master.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to question myself. I wanted to make new questions in my art. And I forced myself into that space of unknown a little bit
mm-hmm.
to dig in and find something new. And I always was interested in painting as an object. And that means, what that means is like painting as a sculpture, painting, breaking the boundaries of the frame and questioning what painting is in the idea of like, you know, what it could be.
Right. That idea of coming 3D from the 2D.
Exactly.
I got you. And so what was the first moment, like the first thing that you, tell me about some of those moments where you begin to expand, you know?
So living in Puerto Rico, you don't think about where you, I mean, you can, but sometimes when you leave, you start missing and you start thinking about the place that you left.
Oh, nostalgia is such a powerful engine, right?
Engine. And anyway, I wanted to understand why I was interested in space and why I wanted to take the painting from the wall to space. And I started doing a lot of mental maps
mm-hmm.
That included mental maps with words of all my influences and all the things that connect and inspire my work.
Mm.
And also started making a lot of drawings of all the places I live in and floor plans. It was very lineal floor plans from memory, from the first house that I remember until the one I was in the moment. And I realized all the places I live in. And I was like, wow, this is a lot of places.
You started counting, like, what, a couple dozen?
I think I end up like more than 20.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, maybe this is why I'm interested in space.
Because you're constantly being introduced to new ones
and
you're interacting with new spaces.
A little bit like a nomad, a little bit. And it has many reasons why that this happened. But I felt there's something here. I want to explore it. And I felt the reason why I had like some sort of like lack of ownership to space was because of the moving, and I never like embrace the place like mine because I know I'm gonna move in next year, so I don't decorate, I don't do anything, I just like keep moving.
Oh, this kind of rootless experience.
It's rootless experience, even though I have no doubt of where I come from, where my family, like this bigger idea about home as an identity. I didn't have that doubt in that. But I have the doubt to space. I have the doubt, like, where home is. And it felt that home was in my memory. Home was in the experience of all those places. And I was like, how can I bring that into my work? How can I talk about it? Because I just didn't want to talk about, oh, like, me seeing all these places or, like, having this experience. I felt like, this sense of belonging to place and space, I think, is a universal. It's a collective experience
to everyone.
Have a place that they feel they belong, or a specific home or something that remind them good or bad memories.
Did you move around a lot when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. So there has to be a part of you that has to
find ground.
Right.
And I think I can find ground through my work.
Hmm.
In my paintings. And there's something there that I maybe can connect with others in an open way that share my experience, but also connect with theirs.
Right.
And that's how I started to develop. And that was a big shift in my work. And what I did is like all this knowledge of an interest about materiality of painting, I move it in this direction. And how can I use this toolbox that I have as a painter in the new work? And I started developing my own techniques of like how to make tiles out of paint, and how to make, I wanted to make reference to floor plans. I wanted to make reference to floor tiles that I remember, to ornamentation of architecture.
You're building pieces of your,
of this
new home for yourself.
Yes.
Through your art. That's so
through
interesting.
Through my art. And it's kind of like a collage. It's kind of like making a composition like a collage, which is something that I would do a lot and think in that way as a designer. So those things that we talked at the beginning of the conversation, like how I can bring all these things together. And I felt like the designer in me started to think and bring in like, how can I like put all this like experiences into a thing in my artwork.
And you know, that gives me so much insight into this one piece that you have. Just as you started at the Norton, there's a piece that's running simultaneously in New York City. Talk to me about that. It's the Times Square's Midnight Moment exhibition, and I want to say it's the largest and longest running public digital public arts display in the world.
Yes,
is what I was reading. So tell me about that. So it's it displays. It's a piece of video art, of motion art, that displays on Times Square at 11:57 p.m. every night through the month of February.
Yes.
So talk to me through that, because it does feel like architectural bits moving in space.
Yes.
Which is you.
Yeah. So the Midnight Moment is a project of Times Square Arts, and it happened every month. It's a different artist. Anyone, please, I encourage everyone to go to the website and apply for it. Anyone that wants to introduce their medium of video, they can apply. In this case, I was invited to submit Arden Sherman, which is the curator of the Norton Museum of Art, of the Contemporary Art. She invited me. And she proposed, this is how everything started, the idea of the residency and the show and everything.
Wow.
And she, I know her from New York City. We worked together in Hunter East Harlem Gallery. It's one of the Hunter College galleries in the city. And she was the art director. I was the gallery manager. So I worked hand to hand with her. And she knew my work and knew me.
You were handling and considering other people's artwork.
Yes.
In the meantime, working on your own stuff.
Working my own stuff. And she knew my work. She had visited my studio many times. And she called me, I think last year, in 2022, like in November. And she's like, would you like to submit a piece of video for Times Square Art for the Mina Moment? And I said, oh my God, I would love to, but it's a video. I don't make video.
Right. You're like, I'm a painter.
And she's like, oh, you can do it. I'm sure you can transfer your work into a video. I took the challenge. It was very challenging. It was. But again, I can do it. I'm going to push through. And she believed it. I mean, she saw it. She knew I can do it. I try. We submitted a first draft. Times Square said, we like it, but I have to be better.
Enough to not say no, but enough to say, give us more.
Give us more.
Interesting.
And they said, you need, what about you hire a videographer that can help you with the project? And I did. I invited Dan Schofield. He's a multimedia artist in New York City. And he loved the project and the idea, and he took hands with me.
Talk to me about, because I know it's obviously going to be running in Times Square, like I said, at 11:57. Mm-hmm. It runs for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
3 minutes and change from 11:57 to midnight. But for the folks that are down here that might not see it, is there a place that they can go? Because I have it on screen right here, and it's really visually interesting. I mean, folks have to go find it.
So the video that is will be in Times Square for the month of February, mm-hmm. it's actually part of the show. So the full video, which is 3 minutes, 56 seconds, the one in Times Square is a shorter version of 3 minutes.
So anybody who goes to the Norton
That goes to the Norton Museum of Art to see my show, Clouds in the Expanded Fields, will like first, before entering the gallery, they will like encounter the video in multiple screens. We try to emulate Times Square setup.
Oh, that's excellent.
In the museum, so they will have the chance to see and experience the video as well here in South Florida.
And look at you, this thing that you were so anxious about, right?
Yes.
Of creating this brand new medium for mm-hmm. you, really working in this brand new medium, is now the entrance, is the
beginning of the show.
The epilogue to your work, or the prologue to your work.
Yes. And it's a video, it's called Eyes of the Sea, and just to say a little bit about it, mm-hmm. it's like a fantasy mythology of my work through, it's starting through the eyes of the breeze blocks. They become eyes in the video, and then you go and see the water, and they start this like journey of this like, kind of like look like fish, and they become like people, and they go to land, and they dance on colonial tiles, and they become like this flower, and the flower become an eye.
It's interesting because I think most of us, especially if you're in South Florida, you there's a good chance your house has some breeze blocks built into it somewhere, and you can almost imagine a world where you're kind of looking through them mm-hmm. and experiencing this kind of kaleidoscope on the other side of it. And I get that sense from your work as a little bit of like this looking through a kaleidoscope.
And I wanted, when I thought about Times Square and the invitation to submit this project, I thought of like, how can I bring something from home to Times Square? How can I change the temperature of Times Square, which is like, and more
that.
In the winter? How can I bring this warmness into the space? How can I occupy the space?
Right. February in Puerto Rico.
It's very different.
Than February in New York
City. So so I have all these things in my head when I decided to plan what's going to happen in the video and what the narrative and how the things were going to move in the paint. So the video is really like parts of my paintings that I edited and I cut it, and I created this like narrative, and parts that move is a stop motion kind of like type of video. It's the first one, and I think it's not going to be the last one because I really like the medium and I want to integrate it in new installations. But it just opened up a new territory for me. And I think it happened through the encouragement of a great creator in West Palm Beach and Arden Sherman, which is also a Floridian creator. She's from Florida. So she's doing a great job bringing new voices into the museum and bringing like Caribbean voices. I think she thinks it's very important the museum can reflect. I mean, this is what I think, right? It's my opinion.
You're looking around the museum?
But what I'm seeing is that she's bringing this, highlighting and bringing this voice so people that also are from here feel identified when they walk into the museum and they can find themselves. And I think that's very important to the Hispanic community, which is, I think, is so part of Florida.
That's interesting. Talk to me about, you know, throughout this process and now working in a place that's like Puerto Rico, but has influences from other places. Talk to me about how that's affected what you're thinking about next, the art that you're thinking about, that it's pushing you towards now. Because this exhibit is what you were thinking about up to this point. Talk to me about what you're thinking about now, just as we have a few minutes left.
I think the exhibition have pushed me to, and the residency and it's pushing me to be more sculptural. It's pushing me to bring some of the paintings into the floor, three-dimensional. I also experienced, which I can say, and I invite everyone to go to West Palm Beach and visit the Ann Norton Sculptural Gardens that are not affiliated to the Norton Museum, but she was the second wife of Norton.
Well,
there's a whole history there.
Well, hopefully, the next time we have you on, we can have you talk about the sculptor.
But go, and that really inspired me a lot in this visit, and I think that will be part of the work, the new work.
Nora, well, thank you so much for coming in and spending time with us and telling us so much about yourself and your work.
Thank you.
Our guest today was Nora Maite Nieves. She's currently the artist in residence at the Norton Museum of Art in West Palm Beach. Her exhibit, Clouds in the Expanded Field, is open at the Norton, and it's running through July 7th. Her work will also be featured in the Times Square Midnight Moments exhibition. You can see it every night in the whole month of February at 11:57 p.m. And that's Sundown for Thursday, January 18th. Leslie Ovalle Atkinson is our lead producer. Our producer is Elisa Baena. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's VP of News, and Katie Munoz is our Director of Live Programming. Peter J. Mertz is WLRN's VP of Radio, and our engineer is Richard Ives. Our theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo at gopalo.com. Coming up next week on the program, Liberty City is 12 feet above sea level, and that's the highest and driest ground in Miami. A new documentary explores how climate gentrification is affecting its residents. I'm Carlos Frias. Good vibes only.
WLRN Public Media.